Chapter 4. I was at a luncheon party, and Archdeacon Wilberforce was there also. I dare say he is Archdeacon now. He was a canon then, and he was serving in the Westminster Battery, if that is the proper term, I do not know, as you mix military and ecclesiastical things together so much. He left the luncheon table before I did. He began this. I did steal his hat, but he began by taking mine. I make that interjection, because I would not accuse Archdeacon Wilberforce of stealing my hat. I should not think of it. I confine that phrase to myself. He merely took my hat. And with good judgment, too, it was a better hat than his. He came out before the luncheon was over, and sorted the hats in the hall, and selected one which suited. It happened to be mine. He went off with it. When I came out by and by, there was no hat there which would go on my head except his, which was left behind. My head was not the customary size just at that time. I had been receiving a good many very nice and complimentary attentions, and my head was a couple of sizes larger than usual, and his hat just suited me. The bumps and corners were all right intellectually. There were results pleasing to me, possibly so to him. He found out whose hat it was, and wrote me saying it was pleasant, that all the way home, whenever he met anybody, his gravities, his solemnities, his deep thoughts, his eloquent remarks were all snatched up by the people he met, and mistaken for brilliant humorisms. I had another experience. It was not unpleasing. I was received with a deference which was entirely foreign to my experience by everybody whom I met, so that before I got home I had a much higher opinion of myself than I have ever had before or since. And there is in that very connection an incident which I remember at that old date which is rather melancholy to me, because it shows how a person can deteriorate in a mere 7 years. It is 7 years ago. I have not that hat now. I was going down Pall-Mall, or some other of your big streets, and I recognized that that hat needed ironing. I went into a big shop and passed in my hat, and asked that it might be ironed. They were courteous, very courteous, even courtly. They brought that hat back to me presently very sleek and nice, and I asked how much there was to pay. They replied that they did not charge the clergy anything. I have cherished the delight of that moment from that day to this. It was the first thing I did the other day to go and hunt up that shop and hand in my hat to have it ironed. I said when it came back, how much to pay? They said, 9 pence. In 7 years I have acquired all that worldliness, and I am sorry to be back where I was 7 years ago. But now I am chaffing and chaffing and chaffing here, and I hope you will forgive me for that. But when a man stands on the verge of 72, you know perfectly well that he never reached that place without knowing what this life is: heartbreaking bereavement. And so our reverence is for our dead. We do not forget them, but our duty is toward the living, and if we can be cheerful, cheerful in spirit, cheerful in speech and in hope, that is a benefit to those who are around us. My own history includes an incident which will always connect me with England in a pathetic way, for when I arrived here 7 years ago with my wife and my daughter, we had gone around the globe lecturing to raise money to clear off a debt my wife and one of my daughters started across the ocean to bring to England our eldest daughter. She was 24 years of age, and in the bloom of young womanhood, and we were unsuspecting. When my wife and daughter and my wife has passed from this life, since when they had reached mid-Atlantic, a cablegram, one of those heartbreaking cablegrams which we all in our days have to experience, was put into my hand. It stated that that daughter of ours had gone to her long sleep. And so, as I say, I cannot always be cheerful, and I cannot always be chaffing. I must sometimes lay the cap and bells aside, and recognize that I am of the human race like the rest, and must have my cares and griefs. And therefore I noticed what Mr. Burrell said. I was so glad to hear him say it, something that was in the nature of these verses here at the top of this. He lit our life with shafts of sun and vanquished pain. Thus two great nations stand as one in honoring twain. I am very glad to have those verses. I am very glad and very grateful for what Mr. Burl said in that connection. I have received, since I have been here, in this 1 week, hundreds of letters from all conditions of people in England, men, women, and children, and there is in them compliment, praise, and, above all and better than all, there is in them a note of affection. Praise as well, compliment as well, but affection that is the last and final, and most precious reward that any man can win, whether by character or achievement, and I am very grateful to have that reward. All these letters make me feel that here in England, as in America, when I stand under the English flag, I am not a stranger. I am not an alien, but at home. Dedication speech at the dedication of the College of the City of New York, May 16, 1908. Mr. Clemens wore his gown as Doctor of Laws, Oxford University. Ambassador Bryce and Mr. Choate made the formal addresses. How difficult, indeed, is the higher education. Mr. Choate needs a little of it. He is not only short as a statistician of New York, but he is off, far off, in his mathematics. The 4,000 citizens of Greater New York, indeed. But I don't think it was wise, or judicious on the part of Mr. Choate, to show this higher education he has obtained. He sat in the lap of that great education, I was there at the time, and see the result, the lamentable result. Maybe if he had had a sandwich here to sustain him, the result would not have been so serious. For 72 years I have been striving to acquire that higher education which stands for modesty and diffidence, and it doesn't work. And then look at Ambassador Bryce, who referred to his alma mater, Oxford. He might just as well have included me. Well, I am a later production. If I am the latest graduate, I really and sincerely hope I am not the final flower of its 7 centuries. I hope it may go on for 7 ages longer. Die Schrecken der Deutschen Sprache, the horrors of the German language, addressed to the Vienna Press Club, November 21, 1897, delivered in German, here in literal translation. It has me deeply touched, my gentlemen, here so hospitably received to be, from colleagues out of my own profession, in this from my own home, so far distant land. My heart is full of gratitude, but my poverty of German words forces me to greater economy of expression. Excuse you, my gentleman, that I read off what I you say will. But he didn't read. The German language speak I not good, but have numerous connoisseurs me assured that I write like an angel. Maybe I know not. Have till now no acquaintance with the angels had. That comes later when it the dear God please it has no hurry. Since long, my gentlemen, have I the passionate longing nursed a speech on German to hold, but one has me not permitted. Men, who no feeling for the art had, laid me ever hindrance in the way, and made not my desire sometimes by excuses, often by force. Always said these men to me, keep you still, your highness. Silence. For God's sake seek another way and means yourself obnoxious to make. In the present case, as usual it is me difficult become, for me the permission to obtain. The committee sorrow deeply, but could me the permission not grant on account of a law which from the Concordia demands she shall the German language protect. Du lieb seet. How so add one to me to say, could, might, dared, should. I am indeed the truest friend of the German language, and not only now, but from long since, yes, before 20 years already. And never have I the desire at the noble language to hurt. To the contrary, only wish she to improve, I would her only reform. It is the dream of my life been. I have already visits by the various German governments paid and for contracts prayed. I am now to Austria in the same task come. I would only some changes effect. I would only the language method, the luxurious, elaborate construction compress, the eternal parenthesis suppress, do away with, annihilate, the introduction of more than 13 subjects in 1 sentence forbid, The verb so far to the front pole that one that without a telescope discover can. With one word, my gentleman, I would your beloved language simplify so that, my gentleman, when you are for prayer need, wonder yonder up understands. I beseech you, from me yourself counsel to let, execute these mentioned reforms. Then will you an elegant language possess, and afterward, when you something say will you at least yourself understand what you said had. But often nowadays, when you a mile long sentence from you given, and you yourself somewhat arrested, then must you have a touching inquisitiveness have yourself to determine what you actually spoken have. Before several days has the correspondent of a local paper a sentence constructed which 112 words contain, and there were 7 parentheses smuggled in, and the subject 7 times changed. Think you only, my gentleman, in the course of the voyage of a single sentence must the poor, persecuted, fatigued subject 7 times change position. Now, when we the mentioned reforms execute, will it no longer so bad be? Dutch not chains. I might gladly the separable verb also a little bit reform. I might none do let what Schiller did. He has the whole history of the 30 years' war between the 2 members of a separable verb in dash pushed. That has even Germany itself aroused, and one has Schiller the permission refused the history of the 100 years' war, to compose, God be it thanked. After all these reforms established the will the German language the noblest and the prettiest on the world be. Since to you now, my gentlemen, the character of my mission known is, beseech I you so friendly to be, and to me your valuable help grant. Mr. Peasle as the public believe make wood, that I to Vienna come, in order the bridges, to clog up and the traffic to hinder, while I observations gather and note. Allow you yourselves, but not from him deceived. My frequent presence on the bridges, has an entirely innocent ground. Yonder gives it the necessary space, yonder can one a noble long German sentence elaborate, the bridge railing along, and his whole contents with one glance overlook. On the one end of the railing pasted I the first member of a separable verb, and the final member cleave I to the other end, then spread the body of the sentence between it out. Usually are for my purposes the bridges of the city long enough. When I but Peasle's writing study will I ride out, and use the glorious endless imperial bridge. But this is a calumny, Peasle writes the prettiest German. Perhaps not so pliable as the mine, but in many details much better. Excuse you these flatteries. These are well deserved. Now I my speech execute, no, I would say I bring her to the close. I am a foreigner but here, under you, have I it entirely forgotten. And so again, and yet again proffer I you my heartiest thanks. German for the Hungarians, address at the Jubilee Celebration of the Emancipation of the Hungarian Press, March 26, 1899, the Ministry and members of Parliament were present. The subject was the Ausgleich, i.e., the arrangement for the apportionment of the taxes between Hungary and Austria. Paragraph 14 of the Ausgleich fixes the proportion each country must pay to the support of the army. It is the paragraph which caused the trouble, and prevented its renewal. Now that we are all here together, I think it will be a good idea to arrange the Ausgleich. If you will act for Hungary I shall be quite willing to act for Austria, and this is the very time for it. There couldn't be a better, for we are all feeling friendly, fair-minded, and hospitable now, and full of admiration for each other, full of confidence in each other, full of the spirit of welcome, full of the grace of forgiveness, and the disposition to let bygones be bygones. Let us not waste this golden, this beneficent, this providential opportunity. I am willing to make any concession you want, just so we get it settled. I am not only willing to let grain come in free, I am willing to pay the freight on it, and you may send delegates to the Reichsrat if you like. All I require is that they shall be quiet, peaceable people like your own deputies, and not disturb our proceedings. If you want the Jejensi, the Gengel, Betragendan, Verhildnisma, Sigkatan rearranged and readjusted, I am ready for that. I will let you off at 28%. 27, even 25 if you insist, for there is nothing liberal about me when I am out on a diplomatic debauch. Now, in return for these concessions, I am willing to take anything in reason, and I think we may consider the business settled, and the Ausgleiches Jeglischen at last for 10 solid years, and we will sign the papers in blank, and do it here and now. Well, I am unspeakably glad to have that Ausgleich off my hands. It has kept me awake nights for Anderthalbger. But I never could settle it before, because always when I called at the Foreign Office in Vienna to talk about it, there wasn't anybody at home, and that is not a place where you can go in and see for yourself whether it is a mistake or not, because the person who takes care of the front door there is of a size that discourages liberty of action and the free spirit of investigation. To think the Ausgleich is abjumicked at last. It is a grand and beautiful consummation, and I am glad I came. The way I feel now, I do honestly believe I would rather be just my own humble self at this moment than paragraph 14. A new German word, to aid a local charity. Mr. Clemens appeared before a fashionable audience in Vienna, March 10, 1899, reading his sketch, The Lucerne Girl, and describing how he had been interviewed and ridiculed. He said in part, I have not sufficiently mastered German to allow my using it with impunity. My collection of 14-syllable German words is still incomplete. But I have just added to that collection a jewel, a veritable jewel. I found it in a telegram from Linz, and it contains 95 letters. Personalen kommen stur Schatzings Commissions mit Gleitreisekosten Rechnings Organzings Revisionsfund. If I could get a similar word engraved upon my tombstone, I should sleep beneath it in peace. Unconscious plagiarism, delivered at the dinner given by the publishers of The Atlantic Monthly to Oliver Wendell Holmes, in honor of his 70th birthday, August 29, 1879. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.